Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Dr. Jeffrey Freeby interviews Richard Yep, the executive director of the American Counseling Association at the 2006 ACA World Conference in Montreal. They speak about the role ACA plays as a professional counseling association for counselors.
Good afternoon, this is Dr. Jeffrey Frieden. We're at the American Counseling Association Conference in Montreal, and today I'm talking with Richard Yep. Richard is the current executive director for the American Counseling Association. He has been the executive director for the last 6 years. He's currently a co-editor of two books that are on display in your signing at the conference this year. One is Terrorism, Trauma, and Tragedies. It's in its second edition. And the other one is Vista's Compelling Perspectives on Counseling in 2006. Good morning, Richard. How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Good to visit with us today. Let me ask you a couple of questions that we start with everybody. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you became director of the American Counseling Association.
Sure. It was a somewhat circuitous route. I had worked in human services at the community agency level for a while. I then got involved in public policy and ended up working on Capitol Hill for a member of Congress. And on any given day, I might be working on human service or education legislation, and the next day I might be working on a bill to establish square dance as the national dance of the United States. And what I realized is that I really wanted to be more focused on the human service and education side, and I had a colleague who worked on one of the committees on the Hill who said, hey, I heard about this job over at the American Counseling Association in their public policy department. So I applied, and as luck would have it, I got the job.
How are you at square dancing? Were you very good at that, or was that kind of eliminated by virtue of your dancing skills?
Well, you know, I don't look that good in those big poofy skirts, so it didn't really work all that well for me.
So one of the questions that I have in being involved in Tennessee in the Counseling Association, we have our members, and we always have questions, and people want to know why conferences are run a certain way. There are, what, about 35,000 plus members now for American Counseling Association?
About 44,000.
Mm-hmm. With 44,000 bosses, okay, yeah. How do you manage to arrange your time or placate all these bosses and keep your job?
That's a very, very good question. As you know, the executive director reports to the governing council. The governing council, of course, is elected from the membership. One of the things that I try to do, is it's almost like being a czar of communications. You just have to be able to communicate with everyone. You have to understand that some of them will be very demanding. Some of them will just have ideas and they want to ask you about them. And really, it's being able to manage that communication and understanding that sometimes when people are irate about something, they just don't want to be heard. They just want somebody to listen to them, and sort of like counseling, I guess. And so that's what I try to do. So I try to keep everybody happy.
You're not a counselor by training, but you become a counselor by virtue of being around everybody, by assimilation maybe?
Right. Some kind of osmosis must have taken place along the way.
Yeah. What did you see as American Counseling Association's biggest strength?
Oh, definitely I think that the standards that ACA sets, the continuing education, the research journals, the advocacy work it does on behalf of the profession, and the fact that it has 44,000 members who are willing to abide by the code of ethics that we've established.
What do you see as the ACA's biggest weakness?
Another very good question. I think there are times when we need to do a better job of explaining to the public who professional counselors are. And I think that having that identity so that the public doesn't confuse us with financial counselors or the stereo counselor over at Best Buy or something like that, it's an identity issue, and I think it's a tough one.
would you say counselors are not very good advocates of themselves or for themselves?
I would definitely say that counselors are great advocates for their clients and their students, but you are exactly right. They're not always the best clients for themselves.
Let me go a little bit different direction and about the American Counseling Association. Several years ago, there was a conflict within the American Counseling Association where the American Mental Health Counseling Association and the American School Counseling Association felt their needs were better met not under direct supervision of the American Counseling Association. And they went and started some of their own business on their own. Okay. How do you see that conflict today?
Well, in a much different way than the way I saw it 7 years ago. I think what I'd say is that while ASCA and AMCA are still regarded as divisions of ACA, they were at the point in their development where they chose to have their own staff, process their own memberships, basically be much more independent. And it's sort of like a family where one of the members of the family has decided that it's time to be more of a peer relationship with the main organization, and that's what we have with them. And we meet on a regular basis, and like I said, their bylaws still say that they are a division of ACA, but it's, you know, one size doesn't fit all for all the divisions, and that's just a different kind of relationship we have with them.
You mentioned that we see it differently now than we did 7 years ago, and I remember 7 years ago the controversy that was mm-hmm. was about that. And you seem yeah. a lot more comfortable with the way things have turned out.
Well, it's a new day and time, and to say that the structure that we operated under 50 years ago, 40 years ago, or even 10 years ago, I mean, society's changed, the profession's mm-hmm. changed, and we need to be able to change with it, and that's just one of the changes.
If you're green, you grow, and if you're ripe, you rot. That's how
okay. I like
we
that.
Put it that way. There's a saying, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So what did ACA learn from this conflict for future divisions and future conflicts?
Well, I think what they learned was the things that work really well in ACA as an organization and as a membership organization or as an advocacy organization is there are some things we do really well, and having to defend those things, whether it's to divisions that want to go off on their own or other organizations that want to sort of battle us on the Hill, it helped us refine our message to be that much clearer on the things that we represent and the positions that we'll take.
If you were to meet a new counseling graduate, a student that is about to go into the field and spread the good word of counseling for themselves and try to earn a living at this, and they were not a member of the American Counseling Association, and you got a chance to meet them, what would you tell them to convince them to join?
I think the thing that I would share with them is that while I certainly respect the training and education that they have put into getting their degree and moving into the profession, is that this is the next step. It's a logical progression to be a member of ACA because, for example, there is a code of ethics that you will abide to. And in this increasingly consumer-savvy society, it's important to say those things. It's important to say, I've jumped through these hoops to be a professional that can service, you know, your needs in some way. And I think that belonging to ACA provides that through continuing education, through the code of ethics, through other services that we provide to members.
So you're saying that joining ACA is just a natural progression. After you graduate, there's still more that you need to do. There's postgraduate work to continue as a professional, and that's belonging to your professional association.
Right. I would say that walking across the stage and getting that diploma, whether it's your master's or doctorate, whatever, is only the beginning toward that path of becoming a complete counselor.
Well, it's interesting you mention that, because one thing that I've noticed being somewhat involved in board licensing procedures in Tennessee, for example, where I'm at, liability issues come up. And when the liability issues come up are, did you follow the ethics of your professional association? So in my mind, I always wonder how a person that doesn't belong to a professional association is even held capable to that law. But nonetheless, the law will hold them to that standard. It's interesting, I find, that the law will hold a person to a standard of ethics of a professional association, but yet the law doesn't require them to join the professional association.
Right.
One thing that was explained to me was that ignorance of the law is no excuse, because a person decides not to join, much like a person decides not to buy car insurance, you're still held liable to all that. And one thing I do in my professional association, I explain to people that, you know, you're held to these ethics, and if you don't belong, you won't get the updates.
Right.
You'll practice without, you know, in danger of losing your license.
Right.
So that's one thing. It's interesting you brought that up, because that's some of the things that we propose down in to new members in Tennessee.
Right.
The conference in Montreal is, I've had a good time. We've talked about this individually. This has been a lot better than maybe I thought it was going to be.
Right.
I don't
sure.
have to speak French, so it's been real well. The people have been wonderful. The weather's been great. It's been, I guess, as far as my short-term experience, one of the biggest conferences that I've been to, with so many things to do. I think this conference, for sure, I've had to not go to certain things because I wanted to go to something else more, which is like those giant supermarkets. I just don't know what to pick forth. And I'm thinking 4 days, I really need 8 days, I think, to see everything on here. This is the first international conference we've had. Multiculturalism is bantered around to the point where we almost might even lose what multiculturalism even means. We're trying to find that here at this conference. How does multiculturalism affect the American Counselors Association, being that we have so many cultures just within America, much less going to Canada or right. going to France or going anywhere else?
Right. Well, again, that's a good question. I think that when the association addresses multicultural issues or diversity in counseling, which is one of our central themes this year, of course, we aren't just talking about doing conferences in other countries. You're hitting it right on the head. The way a counselor practices in the small villages in northern Alaska or even on Native American reservations, there are so many different cultures even within the United States. The fact that this one physically is outside of the United States is kind of cool, I think. The fact that we have not only our Canadian colleagues, but people from all over the world are here for this one. Makes it that much more special, but I think it also points up to the fact that it is an increasingly shrinking world and that we have to be in touch with how they practice in international countries as well as within different cultures in the United States. And hopefully this kind of experience exposes counselors to that.
As you express this thought, and I'm going to ask, I'll give you a personal situation that I have, and I wonder how to bring things from this conference back to it. In my high school where I work, we're truly a diverse high school. I'm an inner city school, but Catholic Charities, in their movement for where they have a lot of refugees and bring them to this country, bring them to my neighborhood. So in my high school, a 7 through 12 school of 1,800 children, we speak 27 different languages.
Wow.
This is in Memphis, Tennessee, which is the last place you think we'd be culturally diverse. What I find in working with these children is that there's no way I can, we're not even talking about learning 27 languages, mm-hmm. but the different types of cultures. For example, I have a big Hispanic population, but my Hispanic population is not just what we call stereotypical Mexican children. I've got children from Cuba, children from Venezuela. I've got a child from Portugal mm-hmm. that has come there. And I have found there's cultural differences within that community where maybe the Cuban children don't like the children from Mexico. We'll take another example where I have children from Vietnam, Cambodia, Laotian, and I have children of Hmong culture. And the Hmong, if you're familiar with it, have no country.
Mm-hmm.
Kurdish children. I have children from Iraq and Iran. And the Kurdish children, once again, have no country. To learn all these different cultures, there's no way to learn them all. You're
right.
Trying to gather them in there. Well, I found that it's difficult to learn. Is there a universal sign, a universal study that maybe the American Counseling Association has identified as a way to understand multicultures? As a clinician, and for example, as a school counselor at my high school, I've got to go from one culture to another culture. I'm coming to American Counseling Association, I'm reading books, and I'm learning about Latino, I'm learning about Asian, but there's so many different formats. How can I best serve my clientele, mm-hmm. my students?
That would be a great book idea. I'm not familiar with any particular resource that would cover it all. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I say to professional counselors all the time when they ask that question, because it's a really good one, is you really have to go with the flow. You have to pick up on those signals that these kids or adults are sending you in terms of what their culture is. And then, you know, it's like being a good reporter, trying to find out in terms of what does that culture do that I might not be real sensitive about, that I need to be more in tune with. So no, I'm not familiar with one thing that would cover it all, just because there's so much to learn.
The world is truly getting smaller. This year we're in Montreal. Like I said, we're having a great time. Future ideas, other M cities. Miami in March is not a bad idea either. I'll throw that one out there. What are some of the future dates or some of the future places that the ACA is planning mm-hmm. on their conferences?
Well, when we decide where we're going for a conference, a number of factors play in. Certainly, we try to have a regional distribution, and that doesn't mean that if we have four regions of ACA that in 4 years, we'll be in every region. But it does mean within a 12-year period, we will do our best to hit every one of those regions at least two or three times. So, for example, next year in 2007, we'll be in Detroit, which, of course, is the Midwest region. And we know, skipping ahead to 2010, we'll be in Pittsburgh. So what that says to us is that in 2008 and 2009, we're probably not going to be in those two geographic areas. More than likely, 2008 will be on the western part of the United States somewhere, and 2009 is still up in the air.
How is that decision made about where we go next?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Part of it is an administrative decision. The other part of it has to do with the governance, the leadership. And we try to maintain that policy, like I said earlier, of going to all the regions over a certain course of time. And then the staff is responsible for putting out requests for proposals from different conventions and visitors bureaus throughout the country. And we have very specific things that we're looking for. It has to be affordable, because our members don't necessarily have a lot of money to spend on really nice hotels. We have to have enough space, because ACA is unique. When you offer almost 500 education sessions, you have to have a lot of space. It really forces us a lot of times to use a convention center, so we need to find a center that is affordable and still isn't a place people would be willing to go to. So there are a number of factors that go into all of that, and that's all the information that gets sent out to these cities around the country, and they come back and tell you what they can do, and then from there we start wheeling and dealing a bit more.
A lot of members, a lot of space. How many people usually come on average to a conference?
I'd say about, lately, over the last several years, about 3,000.
So you are limited as far as rooms. You've got to have a big facility. So Little Rock, Arkansas is probably not high on the list simply because facilities versus who they are, where it's at.
Right. On our what they call peak night, on our the night when we need the most hotel rooms, we would probably need about 1,200 hotel rooms. So if a city can't accommodate that, then they probably would not be in the mix of what we were considering.
That's a lot of hotel rooms.
That is a lot of hotel rooms.
As an executive director, your role is, I would think your role, before I identify your role, is to maintain the course for ACA as directed by the membership or the Governance Council. They give you the charge, this is what we're looking at, you make it happen, or try to make it happen. You're involved in day-to-day operations of the American Council and Association, so you have some opinion, I would think, of what's best for ACA.
Sure.
You wanted to give your input. What direction do you think ACA should take, and what goals should ACA be striving for over the next 10 years?
Great question. It seems to me that one of the things we need to do is a better job of promoting the profession. And I'm really glad to hear, and I've been hearing over the last couple of years, the Governing Council talking about how do we raise that public perspective of what counselors do. because what that leads to is hopefully more jobs for counselors as well when they understand better what counselors do. So I think that over the next 10 years, raising that public profile, whether it's in just in public relations types of things or looking at public policy arena or just finding jobs for counselors, I think that's one of the main things we ought to be doing is advocating for the profession.
I'll go along with that. I agree with that. Okay. Yeah. Two questions I have to ask you. I ask everybody towards the question. Okay. If you could be any animal, what would it be and why?
Oh, I'd be a yellow lab because I have a yellow lab, and I think he's got a great life. He's spoiled rotten. He eats, he sleeps, he plays, does a little more. That's it.
Life is good.
Life is good. Yeah, very much so.
On that same note, okay, on your tombstone, not that I wish anything bad to happen to you, what would it say?
Oh, that's a good one. I think I'd like it to say he did the right thing. He was a good guy.
That's great. I like that. Okay, Richard, thank you for joining us today. I've enjoyed this interview. Today's interview has been with Richard Yep, the Executive Director of the American Counseling Association. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frieden. You can find in the podcast notes on the website, counselorsource.net. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've just heard an interview of Richard Yep, the Executive Director of the American Counseling Association, at the recent ACA World Conference in Montreal. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorsource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.